Do you create audio mood boards?
In a studio, do you have like music constantly playing in the background?
Yeah. Always.
And sometimes on repeat. I love a repeat.
One track,
team,
one album.
My team will hate me for it.
And it can be
incredibly cliche as well. For example, at the moment it's like, you know, whatever's happening, it'll be like White Lotus, right?
Yeah.
Because I find it just so intense and sort of like manic. When you listen to music, it keeps going. Sometimes I do that when we're doing fittings. Or I'm trying to get myself into the mood at 9 a.m. in the morning.
What were you listening to this morning?
This morning it was actually still White Lotus. It sounds like screaming at the end, and I kind of like that.
If you could spend a moment with some remarkable people and discover what their life sounds like, what would you ask? Welcome to Are We On Air, an audio encounter. I'm Armand Nafei, and each episode will feature one conversation with an inspiring friend of mine who will share with us the soundtrack to their life.
Hello, beautiful people, and welcome back to another wonderful episode of Are We On Air? This week, I got someone very special for you. Back in November, I got the chance to visit none other than the Irish superstar, fashion designer, and overall beloved creative, that is J.W. Anderson, aka Jonathan Anderson. We got to visit him in his East London studio. And boy, did we have fun exploring his life soundtrack, of course, but also the studio. We've got plenty of behind the scenes for you on our socials and on our YouTube. You can explore and dig through the clothes and bags and all of the above. Now, not only is Jonathan the designer behind his own label, J.W. Anderson, but also he is the creative director behind the very trendy Spanish label that is Lueve. We talked about Jonathan's favorite music that inspires him in the morning, but also in the studio when he's feeling creative. And here, a little hint, it's
musicals.
We talked about the fashion scene / the industry, but also about his dream capsule collaboration with none other than A$AP Rocky and how it came about. But lots more to discover, so
let's get the party started.
Jonathan, welcome to Are We On Air.
What a pleasure to be here in your home, in your studio.
Yeah, at least it's not raining in London, so usually it's raining.
A bit nippy, though.
It is a bit nippy. Sometimes I feel like I should just move out of London for the winter and then come back. But yeah, all good.
So we're just saying, we just missed each other in Los Angeles. That was great.
LA is kind of good at this time of year because it's like you get really good lighting and it feels like a kind of a non-zone of time. You just feel like you're at the hotel or you're in a car. Or an event. So it just feels like you kind of go from A to B to C and that's it.
I mean, that's what I lived there for many years, and that's what I missed about Europe so much, because you just like walk down a street and there's an unexpectedness. You know, you don't know what's gonna happen.
Yeah.
You don't really have that in LA.
It's very controlled and you end up having to do exactly the same thing all the time. So we're on a lot of coffee.
It's an early morning for us. Cheers. Well, chin chin.
So we're here in our offices, but sort of the calm before the Christmas mayhem, where everything has to get done. But, you know, all systems go.
Well, here we are. And we're kind of going to talk about music.
Music.
And the soundtrack to your life.
The soundtrack to my life. Wow. I should get my Spotify up.
You don't have
to. At least I know then what we're talking about, because I'm very bad with names.
That's so, okay.
Yeah.
So, again, I'm super excited to be here because I feel like music plays a big role also in the creative process in general.
Yeah.
Especially when it comes to design and just to be surrounded by the props and by the clothes and by the designs. But before we get into what's happening today, why don't we start with what happened in the beginning with your earliest significant musical memory that shaped you as an artist?
I'm going to have something completely random in terms of when I was younger, I was in musical theater. This was before even contemplating being a designer. And a very kind of like going back to LA, actually, in terms of like inspiration. When I was younger, I became completely obsessed by the musical Sunset Boulevard, which was Lloyd Webber, very camp of me. But I remember going to see it when I lived in Belfast, when I lived in the north of Ireland. I remember going to see it 4 times, tracking my parents to go and see it. And it was like, it was something that was so kind of obnoxiously theatrical and camp in the way of the idea of Norma Desmond, this idea of this sort of like old Hollywood star. There's something kind of magical about that. So in terms of music, that's a random one, which is musicals. Who would have thought? But in a weird way, I then was in the National Youth Music Theater when I was younger. And I think randomly fashion is some kind of weird theater, you know. It is a kind of performative thing ultimately. You have to build a character and you've got to put music to it and you've got to make people believe in that character for the season. So,
and do you start with a character, like a fictional character?
Sometimes I like this idea. You know, I went through a phase where it was always about like a woman or a man in a certain type of environment, or like they were into certain things, or they were like, you know, their husband was a doctor, or they were a clever, or, you know, there would be something. Now it's a bit more kind of lateral, like it's a bit more kind of, it's less kind of based in one person.
Yeah. More of a general mood.
Yeah, more of a general mood and more kind of, a bit more psychological in terms of like groupings of people, you know.
I know it's very difficult, but how would you describe yourself with 3 songs?
Out of place, maybe, like would be one. So I think in terms of a song for that, I always like playing Mariah Carey, All I Want for Christmas, Not at Christmas. This is like...
So right now, you know, this month is December 1st, you're not going to play.
I'm not going to play. But I kind of like playing in May, you know what I mean? Because I feel like there's not many songs that make people instantly feel kind of giddish.
I don't want a lot for Christmas. There is just one thing I need. I don't care about the presents underneath the Christmas tree.
That probably describes me of kind of out of place. Hey Moon by Nilsson. I think that because it's sort of melancholic, I think sometimes I go through kind of moments of like being quite melancholic, which probably in the 1700s was quite interesting. Probably less interesting now. There's nothing better than when music makes you kind of feel emotionally kind of lost.
I actually ultimately think music is probably the most powerful of the art forms that
really out there, because I think even more than cinema, I think people really remember music. And it ties you to a moment, like things that go good or bad. And then on the complete bipolar side of me and the neurotic side of me would be an entire album, because I think it's like one thing, which is Kiki and Herb at Carnegie Hall, which is Justin Vivian Bond, or Mix Vivian, who is a very dear friend of mine. And it was like the first concert I ever saw of hers. And it sent me wild. And I think I listened to it probably once a week still, because it's just, the lines that are hilarious. It's completely politically incorrect. It's like so astute. It's super intelligent, and it's hilarious.
Round like a circle in a spiral, like a wheel within a wheel, never ending or beginning, on an ever spinning ring, like a snowball down a mountain or a like a carousel that's spinning.
You know, so ultimately, none of this makes sense.
It doesn't have to be. We have many layers to our life. We're like an onion. But I love that as like the theater plays a big role, obviously, and I think the slightly comedic, the wit is behind it as well.
I see myself as kind of melodramatic, ultimately, as a kind of, I feel like my life is a bit like that. And it goes from, in a weird way, a bit like Norma Desmond. It's like, sometimes it's really good and sometimes it's a disaster.
Well, and the soundtrack kind of highlights it. I always say it's like a shadow to our lives. If it's like it's a mood enhancer, or when you're somewhere, it's there. It's like a shadow.
Yeah.
Well, that's the beauty of sound. I mean, that's what we're here, I guess.
Yeah.
Do you create audio mood boards when you're like, for instance, in a studio? Do you have like music constantly playing in the background?
Yeah. Sometimes on repeat. I love a repeat. My team will hate me for it. But sometimes I will get like, you know, and it can be
nods on.
And it can be incredibly cliche as well. You know, so for example, at the moment it's like, you know, whatever's happening, it'll be like White Lotus right now. There's the opening theme tune.
Yeah.
Because I find it just so intense and sort of like manic, dreaming. And I will play it as a kind of, in a weird way, like when you, not that I'm going to the gym, but when people go to the gym, you listen to music, keep it going. Sometimes I do that when we're doing fittings, or I'm trying to get myself into the mood at 9 a.m. in the morning.
What were you listening to this morning?
This morning, it was actually still White Lotus. I'm still onto this theme track, because I was into the very first one, and then the second one, I kind of just love. It's so camp, and it's so kind of like, it sounds like cats screaming at the end, and I kind of like that.
On repeat.
On repeat. And then, you know, and then if I'm trying to really get into the mood, I, you know, Carol G, there we go, there's a weird one for you. And then Tupsa, which is with Nicki Minaj. That's always a great one to get into the office with, because you kind of feel like riled. ¿Qué pasa contigo? Dímelo.
Ya no tiene excusa. Hoy salió con su amiga. Dice que pa' matar la tusa. Que porque un hombre le pagó mal. Está dura y abusa. Se cansó de ser buena. Ahora es ella quien los usa. Que porque un hombre le pagó mal. Ya no se le ve sentimental. Dice que por otro man no llora. No, pero si le ponen la canción.
I'm all for it.
For me, it's sort of like music is this really powerful tool to kind of like set the pace for the day somehow.
Mm-hmm.
And there's moments where I will go through complete benders, like on a weekend, if I'm on my own, I'll put my headphones on and I will start like drinking coffee at like 8 o'clock in the morning until like one, just listening to Dancing Around the Kitchen. You know what I mean? Just like trying to
dance it up.
Well, just, or try, if I'm getting excited about a collection, I will start to kind of like put different parts of music together as if it's happening and that you're in the zone for it.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. So it's not like you actually start with a point like, I discovered this artist or I discovered this song or this album and it's like, mind blown. Let's start building around that. It's actually putting your feelers out.
It'll be very contradictory. Like, you know, it'll be, you know, like we work with Frederick Sanchez for example, with Lil Wefe, or Pascal for JW. And at that moment, I will give an idea, but then I will let go of it because ultimately, whatever I know, I would be late to the party.
They will dive deep. These are the reference tracks and let's go.
Yeah. So then it'll be kind of completely away from that because they'll be like, are you kidding?
I like that you use also two separate or two different music directors, sound designers for these two.
Well, I think it gives it two different soundscapes, ultimately, to the brands. Do you know what I mean? And I think there's two different types of personalities. So you've got JW, which is a bit angsty, a bit bratish, a bit kind of, there's an anxiety in it. Whereas in Lueve, there's something more cerebral, and it's a bit more kind of like cinematic somehow. Mm-hmm.
And how do you differentiate these two when in your design process? Like, so it doesn't get tangled up because you have, these are two different identities. What's your approach?
Well, I have two different teams. I think this really helps. And I kind of like separate the both of them in terms of like when I, one is in Paris and one is in London. And I think that really changes things, you know what I mean? Plus, one has got my name on it, which I think makes a really big difference. And
more pressure or more creative?
Well, I find both of them very free. I think more just like trying to think how I'd explain it. It's, I think with JW Anderson, there is something where it's always going to be this very strange fantasy of what I would love to be able to wear, no matter what gender. Dreaming. Like something like, I would love to be able to pull it off.
I was about to wear the big yellow
sponge.
Yeah. Impossible to answer. But if you could choose one song or one track that defines JW and one song that track defines the
JW Anderson always has to me something which is a bit Joy Division somehow.
I see that.
There is like always something kind of like high low, you know, in it.
Which track?
Disordered.
Love.
You know, I think for me, that's always like...
Is that the that title for you?
Yeah.
Sensations make me feel the pleasures of a normal man. New sensations spare the insults, leave them for another day. I've got the spirit, lose the feeling, take the shock away.
And then in a weird way, I think for Lueve, it would be the Talking Heads, This Must Be the Place. Because I always think it's sort of like, I was never thought it was meant to be the brand. I was never meant to be there somehow. And it was like, This Must Be the Place, do you know what I mean? Like it was like, and I think there's something about that song that reminds me of like my best friend, Ben, who works with me. And the moment that we started that brand, and I feel like it is in that kind of moment.
I love that. As well as playfulness to the Talking Heads, like an artistic playfulness.
Yeah. Can you remember what his whole thing was when he quit?
David Byrne?
Yeah. But I think he was like looking out onto the audience and then he like just decided that.
This is it.
This is it.
Head in the sky, it's okay.
Peter. He's been on the show. You should thank him for this episode.
I think he's such a genius. So,
so are you, though. As a creative director, though, how, and I love that you took your time with the wave in the beginning, how do you manage to carve out that space, the time, to not right away jump into it, but like, let's have some distance, let's think about this for a minute?
Well, my whole thing is like, we are in a society and in a culture and in a moment where everyone's everything so fast. They want a brand to be like trendy and popular in day one. They want sycophantics about brands. It's immediate. And it's like, I hate that. Like, for me, it's always about long term. It's like, very slowly does it. Tick all the bases to make sure that you don't like bankrupt a company. But the key is, for me, is ultimately to be part of the culture, you know, and it takes time. I think we have this obsession about trendiness or this idea of being cool all the time that I think the last 10 years have been like a blur to me, because I feel like I don't know what's popular, what's not, what people want, what they don't. And I find it all kind of like incredibly obnoxious sometimes. So for me, it's about really just digesting where you are. And it's fine not to be instantly popular, because I think if you're trying to reignite a brand or consolidate your own brand, it takes time. And I think you don't want to be the flash in the pan, and where it's like, this industry can build you up very quickly and then can like decapitate you. It's probably like that in any creative field. Like, when you're at the very top, the closer you get to the sun, you know, your wings may melt away.
And you keep seeing it over and over again, like how no matter how big and successful you are, there's always somebody who wants to kick
your leg. And I think, you know, for me, it's about, don't scream too loud, Tremaine. Don't be too noisy. Now that we're talking about music. It's better to be a little low profile, you know. So, yeah. But I'm not very good at advice, so.
Well, you kind of are. And I like how you, and I know it's challenging to kind of reinvent an established brand or with heritage and kind of, okay, what is this for today? Mm. I mean, what's the process? What's the best way to approach a brand with heritage, taking it forward?
Well, I think the ultimate thing, which is different from J.W. Anderson, is ultimately your name is not above the door. There is a legacy. And I think what we're starting to realize in today's so-called luxury market is that craft is incredibly powerful, because I think it is the human connection to a luxury good, ultimately. Because we all can relate to the idea of understanding how someone's made, how to make it, this idea of legacy, this idea of information passing from generation to generation. This is something which is older than the history of time. You know, it's like, you know, it's like in the way we do a basket project. And for me, that really boils down to this idea of, well, some of the earliest forms of carrying devices are baskets. So you have to kind of respect it and at the same time challenge it within itself, you know what I mean? So that it doesn't end up kind of becoming something that it's not, do you know what I mean? Like when I look at it, what I do in both brands, I think J.W. Anderson is different because it's my name. But when I'm at Loewe, I always think, what is right for the brand? Not what is right for me, what is right for the brand? And I think this is incredibly important in a historical brand, because you are then building the legacy for the brand, not for yourself.
And do you think that sometimes what some creative directors might do wrong when it becomes too much about the individual?
I don't think there's any wrong or right. You know, there's a lot of more successful designers than me. They've got incredibly amazing linear visions of like things. And sometimes brands need that because maybe there is not very much there. I think when you're dealing with a leather goods, which has not had a fashion language, in a weird way, they can be the more complicated to rebrand or redo because you are dealing with very heavy tradition. But at the same time, there is a construction language, there is a make, there is an artisan, there is...
Which people are drawn to. I mean, I would say three things, especially in social media, that works as sex, comedy, and showing the craftsmanship, how things are done, getting done. I think having a heritage brand such as Loewe...
Yeah, I you know, Loewe's been going since 1846, to me. It survived revolution. Do you know what I mean?
And it will survive me.
And it will survive me, and I will survive.
Yeah, should I add that track to it?
I should add that track
Yeah.
You know, heritage is a kind of an amazing thing and a poison chalice thing. And I think sometimes you just have to know how to navigate it in a way that feels honest to yourself within that brand.
Talking about brands, there's currently this major shift that just happened over the past few weeks and months and within the fashion world, let's say, at least. I mean, lots of things and changes happening in the world. And
fashion seems to always be changing. It seems to be just never happening.
But like Ralph leaving or closing his label, Alessandro leaving Gucci, Balenciaga leaving itself.
Yeah.
You know, and so forth. What's happening? Why is it happening? Is there like a major moment shift happening? I mean, we just said that we were so overconsumed and so much just happened. I mean, you were just saying the past 10 years just were a flash. Going by, do you think that's like a major...
Yes, sir. I was just still on this David Byrne thing. His excuse for leaving was he was sick of playing for people who had their feet stuck in the mud. Maybe it's a kind of good analogy that, you know, sometimes we get stuck in the mud of everything. You know, fashion is so consumed by the idea of who's going where and where, what's happening. And we're never happy of what we already have. Then we build these people up and then we kind of, once again, we like cut them at the knees. I'm speaking as a creative director. Being a creative director is so difficult today in a very strange way. It's not about the workload. It is probably one of the biggest words of the last 5 years is like cancel culture, which is like you're living on a knife edge all the time of like what is going to go wrong. And you can't live like that. Do you know what I mean? And it's in every industry. And I think it can be counterproductive. And I think sometimes we have to realize that creative directors do make mistakes. We are... You know, we're human.
Does it kill creativity?
Yeah, well, I think it makes it more kind of, it puts it on nerve. Everything's all very unnerved. And like when you look at something like Michele, who really owned the last 10 years, like in a way that Tom Ford did when I was younger, and or like Hedi Slimane did it, Dior Men's. You know, yes, things come to an end. It's, you know, fashion is secular and we go in and out of trend, but in a weird way, we just don't know how to deal with the end somehow. Like, we don't know how to appreciate what we had or that things go out of fashion, come back in a fashion. And some people give their entire creative world to a brand. And it's hard. I think people forget how hard it is to kind of do this many amount of collections and do the advertising campaign and the stores and the thing. And at the same time, not make a mistake, be perfect, like tick every single box. And I think we expect this, and this is not fashion. This is not me being like fashion is like the most like be all and end all. This is happening in everything, in music, in politics, in art. It's like, we just want to write things out because it's just easier. It's nearly like in society, we've decided that we can't be bothered to deal with forgiveness or to understand or to be willing to understand. So we just, in a weird way, we just decide to cancel it.
Then to not even engage with it.
You can't even engage with it. So you don't even actually make a solution to a problem. And this is kind of absurd in a weird way. And it's sort of like, because we stop the dialogue. We hate it. And then we move on to the next thing, to hate. And I don't think this is productive as a society. And this doesn't matter if it's fashion, if it's supermarkets, if it's television. This doesn't help because nothing gets solved in it, because we kind of go, nah, 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 and then, nah, 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 nah. And then we leave a wave, like a kind of like wake of like unfixed problems.
But I think even this is going to have like a beginning, middle, end. As we were just saying, everything has its moment. So hopefully that will also eventually transform into the people over a cancel culture.
I keep thinking that we're going to want to have a dialogue with one another, yeah, or sort of like believe in actual real facts. I think this is the other thing today, is like, we don't know what's real or what's not real. We believe in things that are upset. You know what I mean? We love the internet and we love information. But at the same time, we don't know how to deal with it. Do you know what I mean? And I'm not a religious person at all. And I grew up in Northern Ireland, so it's all about religion. But even if you are not religious, or you were to kind of look at religion in some context, taking the good parts out of it and looking at just like famous lines, it's sort of like, you know, love thy neighbor or forgiveness. And we have these things on banknotes, but we don't want to forgive anyone. We just want to, it's better, it's easier to hate people. Maybe I'm rambling on, but in a weird way, what I think, if you look at the last week, these are amazing designers. And they're competition to me, but they're amazing designers, because if they're not, they're no competition, there's, I can't design. You need competition. And sometimes I stand back from it all. I'm kind of like, oh my goodness. Like, it's like, you realize that it's sort of like so complex now, that because we don't want to listen to people or solve problems, do you mean? Because in a weird way, it probably comes to this idea of capitalism, that, you know, fashion is this big bad guys because they make money from things, and but like music makes money from things, and, you know, cinema makes money, and all these other creative forms, art makes money. But there is something where, because it is so part of the popular culture now, fashion, it has never been more fashionable to like fashion, that we kind of treat the brand, ignoring the creative director, as this like celebrity that needs to be hammered. Do you mean? And this is, I think, is sort of strange, I think. If we start to realize that in society, nothing is perfect, but we can have dialogues to make things better. Life will never be perfect, because that is life. But if we have this willingness to kind of listen to one another, correct one another in a way that is constructive, then I think creativity could be really interesting. You know, we can go into this next decade being excited. It takes many people to move these things forward. So
why don't we start with that right now?
Exactly. Let's just start.
The beginning of the end.
No, but because I, as a kind of horrible, boring, cliche thing to say, I am an optimist, and I always think things will always get better. You know, and I only can speak in terms of fashion because I work in fashion, but, you know, I feel that, you know, anyone who works in this industry, I respect, because ultimately it's a very difficult job. And I think people don't realize how difficult it is, because it's business, it's creativity and business meeting. So that's a very hard balance to get right. The pressure doesn't really come from anyone by yourself if you love what you do, because you're always trying to outdo yourself or to perfect things. And like when you go to the cinema, you go to be entertained. Fashion, you want to entertain people. You want people to engage. You want people to question things. And this involves a dialogue with the consumer. And I think that's exciting. But as everything, you have to be willing to make mistakes. And I think we have to allow, obviously, for mistakes to happen, but to have a constructive dialogue about it, instead of just, it's over. Because if we just end up, if everything becomes clickbait, we're kind of, you know, it would be horrible to be kind of like end up in a situation that we kind of, we are heading towards a world that is just about low-grade happiness somehow.
Hopefully not. Well, actually, on that note, you're getting ready for a night out. You're in your closet. You're like, hey, what? I mean, room, whatever it is going to be. and you're getting ready for a night out, what's your go-to track that puts you in the mood?
I think it would be like something by Charlie XCX. I think she just gets you in the zone to go out. Do you mean
what track shall we play?
Good ones. You know, Charlie is like being in our campaign, and even before she was in the campaign, I was just like obsessed. I just like her because she's just like original. She's like sassy as hell. She's super talented. Plus, I think she makes you feel sassy a bit. Do you mean it makes you feel a bit sexy?
Is that how you want people to, when they wear your clothes, to feel?
Oh, I want people to feel whatever they want. But ultimately, yeah, I think people should feel good about themselves, yeah, ultimately, and should feel wanted. You know, I think we all want to be wanted somehow.
Me too. Talking about Charlie, what was like the moment that you will never forget working, because we work with so many people and so many collabs? Is there like one moment that will stuck with you that really left an imprint?
I once did a collaboration with ASAP and we did
Rocky.
Yeah, it was really early on. It was a long time ago. And in the basement of a hotel, he did a concert.
At the Mercer? Is that Mercer?
No, it was in London, wasn't it? The Ace.
I don't know.
And we'd done these like tops and like amazing knits, and I just adore him. Like, I just think he's one of the nicest guys, so talented, loves and has huge knowledge in fashion in a way that I sometimes would get advice from him.
Wow.
Because he just has this very good way of looking at things. He has a very good zeitgeist on what's happening. And I remember doing that with him and just being mesmerized by, like, this was just, for me, amazing.
What track shall we play? What was he performing? Was he performing?
He was like DJing. I don't even know what. He was able to get so many people in a good spirit. He's just got this like magnetic energy and is incredibly handsome, incredibly talented. He just gets people around. I remember actually once being in a studio with him in New York, and he was, I remember him like doing music against like Moby, which I thought was like so interesting. There's nothing more exciting than watching someone make music, because I could never make music. You know, when you look at someone just being like entrenched in this, it's such a complex thing to do. It really is another level of thinking. I think he's just a dear friend and someone who I just think is incredibly inspiring for people. Praise the Lord. We can play that.
There you go.
Get it. Text a message. I don't know the number. Flexing on these niggas, every bone and muscle. Steady taking shots, never hurting them. Even then, y'all don't worry nothing. And I like to give a shout out to my niggas with the game plan. And shout out to my niggas with escape plans. 20 bands, rain dance. We can eat the rain check or we can make plans. Pockets loaded, rocket loaded, can't let's rock and roll this. Time to go, lock, stock, and two smoking barrels locked and loaded. Diamonds glowing, chop, climbing on them. We think I'm jumping out the window, I got them open. Line around the corner, line them up, the block and over. Sometimes I even stop the smoking when it's time to focus. My shade, Dior, my pants, velour.
Well, to go slightly more intimate.
Yeah.
What's your go-to falling in love or heartbreaks?
Oh my God. It's always about, I'm in love.
Oh, so are you listening when you're in love?
Well, when you're in love with someone, you always are into the music they're into. You know, this is...
I was like, you better listen to mine.
I think it's like this thing that you share together, do you mean?
Yeah.
As you know, like, with my boyfriend, like, you know, we've had amazing kind of, you know, we've been going together for a long time and we've had some like, you know, very big things have happened, like very emotional things have happened. And I always think the one song, and it's very sad, is Both Sides Now, because I think it reminds me of a very tough moment. And I think the tough moments are the moments that get you through. And I think that song just reminds me of a very difficult moment that we were dealing with. And it was like, we got through it together as a team. And it, in a weird way, it's a very emotional song, but at the same time, it's a very strong song. You know, Joni Mitchell just is like a very, one of those artists that just got better and better and better and better. Like the trajectory was only up.
Yeah, queen.
Rose and flows of angel hair and ice cream castles in the air and feather canyons everywhere. I've looked at clouds that weep, but now they only block the sun. They rain and snow on everyone. So many things I would have done, but clouds got in my way. I've looked at clouds from both sides now.
Well, after the heartbreak, boy, when you're super in love.
Oh, like, for me, it always is like the Pixies.
Yeah, interesting. Yeah, I had that moment as well. 20 years ago.
I always think the Pixies are very good for that.
Where's my mind?
Yeah. It's so, yeah.
Say no more.
Say no more.
And when you're feeling super sexy.
Oh, actually, there's this guy that I really love called Only Fire. I'll leave it at that. He's got a few tracks that are incredibly outrageous, the lyrics in them, but they're quite nice in a nightclub as you're kind of...
Love it. Well, Jonathan, to wrap up our little chat, if your life would be a movie, what song would play in the end credits?
Maybe like Tina Turner, Nightbush.
Ooh.
Why not?
Why not?
Well, thank you for having me.
Well, thanks for being on air with us.
Thank you so much.
A church house, gin house, a schoolhouse, outhouse, on highway number 19. The people keep the city clean. They call it Nutbush. Oh, Nutbush. On a Nutbush city limit. 25 was the speed limit. Motorcycle not allowed in it. You're going to store on Fridays. You're going to church on Sundays. They call it Nutbush. A little old town. Oh, Nutbush. They call it Nutbush city limit. You're going to feel on weekdays and have a picnic on Labor Day. You're going to town on Saturdays, but going to church every Sunday. They call it Nutbush. Oh, Nutbush. They call it Nutbush city limit.
Thank you for tuning in this week. If you want to listen to the full playlist, visit areweonair.com or our Spotify channel. You can also find us on Instagram and on YouTube at @arionair. And a big thank you to my wonderful team at Studio Noi. I'm Armand Nafei, and I'll speak to you soon.